Hi, welcome to Just Friend Zone. I'm Kevin.
I'm Josh.
I'm Damien.
So today we've got a guest. He's Damien's friend. So I'm going to go ahead and let him take care of the introduction today.
Sounds good. Thanks, Kevin. So this is a dear friend of mine from college. We've known each other for 10, 11 years now. Oh my gosh, so long. He is the swaggest El Salvadorian Filipino that I know. He's a teacher. He loves Magic the Gathering, Pokemon, and he's got killer moves on the dance floor. Everyone give a hand to Jeremiah.
What's up, y'all? Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate y'all.
Thanks for being on the show. So I guess we have to start with that intro. Swaggiest El Salvadorian. How are we? What is that?
I'm half Salvadorian, half Filipino. Mm-hmm. And you know, Damien thinks I got style, then I got style. But I like to talk. I like to meet people. I'm very outgoing. I like to do fun things. Damien, what do I like doing? Tell the peoples.
Well, so when you and I first met, you had convinced me to go to a local hobby store and buy my first Magic the Gathering card set. In college, you taught me how to dance to, I think it was Adorn by Miguel, for like this kind of choreography set that you were doing. And we had fun, just you teaching me how to dance in the San Francisco State dorm rooms. And then from there, it's just a lot of drinking and hazy moments, just because I swear this guy can drink you under the table at any given point in time.
You took me down memory lane, bro. That's so funny. I remember us dancing in the hallways of the dorm rooms and stuff, or like the dorms just like next to the elevator, like because you used to b-boy too, and I was like, oh man, I'm not good at that stuff. So we used to just practice and hang out and do that stuff. But good times, man. Good times.
Funny story, two things. One, Kevin is part of the b-boy group I used to breakdance with.
So, no way.
We both were in track and field, and we were both in the breakdancing group in high school. So that's definitely just all lives coming together at that point. But I think that to kind of start off, one of my favorite memories of you was being able to see you at your show at, you know, Community College San Francisco. Right. And just being able to, you know, see you put on your performance and, you know, just seeing you really in your element. So Jeremiah is just all good energy all the time. So it's great for me to connect with you whenever I can.
I appreciate you, man. Yeah, man. Those good times. I don't dance as much anymore, but those shows were a lot of fun. Met a lot of good friends. Learned a lot. And, you know, I got to meet you, which is a blessing in my life, though. So.
For sure. I'm so happy and grateful for our friendship. But yeah, to start off, why don't you tell our listeners, you know, a couple things to know about yourself, like how you want to kind of just tell your story and have us get to know you a little bit better.
Cool. So I'm originally from Sonoma, California, wine country. I danced a bunch in high school, obviously. I wasn't a b-boy, so I wasn't that cool. But then I was over small town living. I love my parents so much, but I was just like, yo, I need to get out of here. It's too small. People know each other too well. Same dating pool, if you know what I mean. Very small. And so I had to get out of there. But I still wanted to be close to my parents, visit whenever I could. So I was like, where can I go to broaden my horizons, learn more about myself? But still be far away from all of the small town living, but close enough that I could visit. And that was San Francisco. I came out here right after high school, 2011. I was trying to be a nurse at first, you know, follow the Filipino ways. But I was like, you know, the blood, the death isn't for me. I have a hard time dealing with death, whether it be like someone I met a few minutes ago or whatever. So I was like, I can't do this. So I was like, what am I good at? And I thought to myself, I'm good at math. I've always been good at math. I did geometry as an eighth grader. I went to the high school as an eighth grader and did accelerated math with some of my friends. So I was good at math, and I know myself. Like, I was like, what can I do with math that isn't sitting at a table all day or at a desk, just like typing away? And I was like, I'll be a math teacher. I've always wanted to help people. I mean, that's why I wanted to be a nurse, right? So I was like, I want to be a math teacher. I want to help people through math and, like, you know, try to get these students that hate math or that don't really identify with math to see someone that is brown doing math. And I think that's like one of my biggest goals, is to get these young brown, black students to be interested in the STEM field. So I transferred from City College, where I did my dancing. And then I transferred to SF State, where I got my math my math degree and then my teaching credential. And then I ended up deciding to stay in the city and work in the community that I was kind of brought into, right? I started teaching at Balboa, which I live right next to right now, and I transferred over to Burton High School, which is like 10 minutes away. And it's been a good experience so far. My hobbies include, like Damien said, dancing, Pokemon, Magic the Gathering, video games. But with the nerdiness comes, I guess, how Damien explains it, the swagginess. I love to go out. I love to hang out with people. I like experiencing new things. I like a long walk on the beach with a martini.
All right, whoa. This is not a dating show. Come on, man.
My bad.
Hey, what's your star sign? While you're at it, what's your star sign, you know?
Oh, yeah, so I got you. It is a Taurus sun, a Sag rising, and a Taurus moon.
You got the whole thing. You got the moon.
Three for the girls, bro. Come on now. You gotta know all three. Trust your man.
I wasn't ready for that one.
But you know, I'm happily taken. So you know, ladies, hit my single boys in the city. Yeah.
I feel like our listener like breakdown is probably like 90% men anyway. And like the few girls that listen are probably all taken.
My boys, what's up? Ain't swing that way, but we can be friends. But yeah, I mean, that kind of encapsulates me. I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, you said something early on that I want to ask about, because you said you were from a small town, and you were tired of small town living because it was just small pool, right?
Right.
I'm just curious, how big was your graduating class?
I think like 170, 200.
Wow.
So small. Like I knew everyone. And people say, I like to talk to people. So like people say I was popular, but I wasn't part of the popular crowd. Like with all these hobbies, I definitely was not part of the popular crowd. But I just was like someone who was open to talking to like everyone. So it seemed like I had like a lot of connections. Mm-hmm. And I technically do, but it's like, but yeah, 170, 200. I knew everyone's name. And that's what I mean. Like, if you think about it like that, dating pool is real small. But it's not just about like, you know, the dating pool. It's just like when you live in a town, everyone's doing this in a small town, everyone's doing the same thing. You're hanging out the same spots, you're going to the same places. So as much as I love everyone from my hometown, I was like, I'm happy to come back, and I'm still like grateful, and I'm still like every time I go back, it's a blessing and I love it and I love being there. But I don't see myself there for more than a week or two. Just because like I like space, I like meeting new people and all that.
Right. And I'm sure like being in such a small town can feel suffocating, right? Especially once you go out to somewhere as big as San Francisco.
Right. And I mean, granted, like if I ever did move back, like I would have to move in with my parents, and we don't want that. Let's be real. I don't want that. They don't want that. My brother doesn't want that.
Yeah, they're like, you're back? I thought we got rid of you.
Nah, they would be happy, but like I don't know if I would.
Okay. Yeah. And then, so you said you also teach. So I don't know these two schools that, you know, I'm not familiar with the schools that you mentioned. You said one's Balboa and the other one is the one you're currently teaching at.
Yeah. Burton High School. Yeah, they're both East Side San Francisco school. Demographics very Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, Black. So very brown and Black demographic, and you know, I'm just happy to like be out here and helping these kids. But yeah, they're both great schools. I made great communities at both, and like I'm one of the few lasting people after this year. We have like, I think I want to say 15 people leaving.
Wow.
Yeah. 15, maybe from 15 to 20 people leaving my school this year. And that's just because of like how bad the district has been handling teachers. Mm-hmm. I forgot to say I'm a math teacher. This year I teach geometry and compression, which is a mix of Algebra 2 and pre-calculus.
Oh, I've never heard of that before.
Yeah,
it's like, so I don't know how it was in your high schools, but in my high school it was like freshman, if you go the normal route, you do freshman, Algebra 1, geometry, sophomore year, and then a class in between that, which is like Algebra 2 mixed with trig, mm-hmm. so that way your senior year you're ready for calculus.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what basically that compression class is. It's the Algebra 2 mixed with the pre-calculus trig so that it kind of like gets you ready for the calculus, the AP calculus your senior year.
Gotcha. Oh. Okay. Okay. Yeah. That makes more sense.
For us, I think it was trig and stats. That was my school. That's what my school was. It was called trig and strats and trig and stats. And then we go back, we get into like pre-calculus after that. But I don't think we have calculus.
Gotcha. Yeah. Our stats, like our juniors, after the junior year, they can choose whether they want to be in stats or AP Calc. But if you take my class, more than not, you want to kind of lean into the AP Calc route, just because, like, you know, if you're taking this class, then you're kind of getting ready for it.
Okay, that's cool. And so, since you serve, are you teaching in a community that's, you know, predominantly minorities, right? And you said predominantly brown and Black, right?
So, yeah.
Like, are there some like unique challenges that you think you have to tailor your teaching, teaching style to, that you feel like other communities probably don't have to worry about these things?
Absolutely. I think in most cases, like no matter where you work, in education, there's a different set of challenges, and all the challenges are difficult. Let's be honest here. Education is something that in this country is something that needs to be worked on from the like highest like thing, right? Like at the why am I blanking? Like at the level
organization.
Yeah, exactly. Like all the way to DC. Like there should be things that they need to be working on for education, but sadly they want to run this thing like a business and try to make money, and you know, those resources don't go to students. But in my and that kind of directly translates into my area of teaching, my demographic, resources. It all comes down to resources, right? If I'm serving underprivileged Black and brown youth, we know that they have low socioeconomic standings, right? And that leads to what, like, even from an early age, parents are reading to them less. Why? Because they have to be working. You know, they have to support the family. They're not there every moment to help them with homework, read every night. That's not to say that that doesn't happen, but like in my community, you can see the disparity in resources. And it's a challenging thing. The way I tailor my classroom is I build rapport with students. I make these connections that students like will care for, I want to say, more than not. Like, of course, we've seen those teachers who are in the classroom just talking monotone, turn Severus Snape type of thing. You know what I mean? Like, turn to page 587. You know what I mean? Like, and like, they don't connect with that. But as soon as they see someone who kind of talks like them, who looks like them, they can start to identify and like really open up themselves to someone like that, right? And so my kind of entry point with a lot of these students is build those relationships and have open dialogue. Like, I'm definitely one of those teachers who puts a lot on the floor for them. Like, I'm willing to talk about my personal life, what I'm going through. If I'm having a bad day, I don't take it out on the students. I tell them, hey guys, look, like, I'm having a rough time mentally or whatever, right? I need you guys to be aware of that, so you know that, like, you know, my fuse is short. And I don't think, you know, like, you guys can attest to this, like, growing up, how many teachers really said that to you ever, right? Like, it's definitely a change of paradigm, because being a millennial versus a boomer teaching, it's like, I'm more sensitive to what these kids are feeling. And I'm like, more like, I'm closer to their age than I am a boomer or someone of older guard, right? So like, I can, like, I'm listening to the same music as them. They like The Weeknd, I like The Weeknd. You know what I mean? Like, we're singing, I Left My Girl Back Home, you know, in class. And like, they're vibing and they're learning math. And that's all I really care about is, like, can I deliver the math to them? And two, can I build a good relationship with them?
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I don't want to take away from like the gravity of what you've been talking about, but I do need to say, side note, that is the first time on our podcast that anybody has sang so freely and openly. I'm a bit like caught off guard by it.
I'm a bad singer. My Filipino genes did not give me the singing, you know what I mean? The karaoke. I got the dancing and the caring. I didn't get the nursing or the karaoke. So I got the eating lumpia too. So there's
You know, I've actually never had lumpia.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I still don't even really know what it is.
It's just a Filipino egg roll.
Filipino egg roll?
Yeah.
So like a Vietnamese egg roll will have like mushrooms, carrots, kind of like different types. It's basically a smaller egg roll, but just like more specified savory fillings.
Rather, hey man, than... most people would say it's average size, bro. Come on.
My bad, bro. My bad.
I mean, like, are we talking like average, or are we talking, you know, like average, it's kind of, you know, it's girthy, right?
All you need to know, it is delicious, and if you try it once, you'll be addicted. You know what I mean? They keep coming back for more.
Yeah, it'll leave you satisfied.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right. Okay.
God.
Okay. Getting back on topic.
Yes, sir. What you got for me?
Yeah, you were talking about, you know, being a math teacher and opening up relationships with these students. And, you know, you did point out, like, you know, none of us probably have ever had a teacher like that. And I'm like, looking back, I'm like, yeah, probably. I think the closest I would say to a teacher being open with us, like Damien, I think you would know Mr. Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say he was probably the closest we had. He was our psych teacher. And I think just because he's under, like, you know, he understands like the human psyche, like that's why he's willing to open up to us on certain things. But yeah, that's a very unique way to approach, you know, education. And so do you feel like that actually does make a, you know, difference in terms of like these kids are opening up to you? They are like, you know, willing to be more receptive to what you have to say and to teach, and to, like, they're, you know, like, I like this teacher, therefore I will put more effort into this class? Or is it like, I like this teacher, but I still don't care about the subject?
I think both. Like, I think there are students that are like, well, I really mess with this teacher, so I'm actually enjoying this class, which makes me do my work more than I normally would it. Mm-hmm. But there's still, of course, those students that are like, have trauma, have issues paying attention, have, you know, stuff in their life, their home life going on, and they just don't want to do anything. And, you know, like the best thing that we as educators can do are just be consistent, put the work in front of them, you know, do check-ins, you know, anything that can help their learning, and not just like learning the material, but like their day-to-day living, you know, like just having an adult be there and constantly checking in on them, like, hey, are you okay? Did you sleep enough? Did you have anything to eat today? Like, I think goes so far, especially with these students in this, you know, certain demographic. And it also is like, again, like we all grew up on authoritative figures in the classroom, right? Like, yo, you need to sit down. You need to work. You need to do math problems 1 through 70 odd numbers only. You know what I mean? Like, did that hit?
Are you my teacher?
We all just started laughing because we all had those teachers. But that's not, like, those aren't the moves anymore. You can't, like that only works for certain students. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many types of learning, kinesthetic, visual, audio, all these different things. And it's like, when you're only doing that specific type of teaching, there's only a few students in that class that will succeed. And I mean, there's this whole thing too, like in new type of teaching where they're like, it should be more exploratory. They need to find their answers themselves. Of course, you need to like actually teach them eventually, but it should be explored and gathered rather than just told. And so the way I try to do things and the way, like, the thing is, there's no right way. I'm still learning how to teach. This is my fifth year, about to be my sixth year teaching. I'm still figuring out things I need to do better, things I can improve on, things I need to change. And for me, it's like, I need both. I need that 1 through 70, that drill and kill, so you know how to do those things procedurally. But I also need those exploratory moments where they're thinking outside the box. They're looking at the problem and saying, okay, this way doesn't work. Let's try something new. Well, what if we did this? Hey, you, let's do some group work. Let's try and put our minds together. Like, for us, it was very solitary. Yeah, they said work on problems. But if you think about it, if it's just all procedure, 1 through 70 odd problems, you're just doing the same algorithm over and over again. If I teach you how to factor, what do? 50 problems of factoring, right? But now it's a little different where it's like, okay, let's teach them how to factor without teaching them the algorithm. Mm-hmm. And then we give them the algorithm. And it's like, okay, now that you kind of seen where factoring comes from, now I can give you this thing where it's like, oh, here's a formula. This is how you factor every time. Mm-hmm. So I believe in kind of both. Like, I love what the old guard taught me, but I'm like perceptive to all these newer ideas as well.
Going off of, first off, the doing all odd numbers, that really hit me. Like, talk about trauma. That really stroke up some trauma with me. Talking about basically, like, you know, you have to take some good with the bad. You know, this is coming up to your sixth year of teaching. What would you say, maybe just within this past year, because I'm sure that's like too many memories to dig up, what are some of the, what's like one of the higher points or some of the kind of like higher, more memorable achievements that you've had, breakthroughs with your kids or teaching in your fifth year? And what are some of the low points that you've had ever experienced while teaching students?
So this year, like, because I'm like finally, like, I've been in teaching for quite a bit of time now. Like, I got two student teachers this year. So not only was I teaching students how to like do math, but I was also teaching college students how to become teachers. And so this is a very high point for me. I was at the beginning, I was like, damn, do I really take this extra responsibility? Yeah, they're going to take over two classes, so that'll lessen my load. But like, the thought of like teaching other adults how to do something, like, I had all these reservations of like, are they going to be perceptive to what I'm saying? Are they going to follow my lead? Are they going to make things worse for me? You know, I was like, I was very, at the beginning, like, very afraid. But I ended up having two really great student teachers this year who made my teaching better. Gave me ideas I never would have thought of, made me grow as a teacher through this, you know, through this opportunity. Shout out Emily and Kayo. But I think that is the highlight. And just like being in my fifth year, like, I found a groove. Like, I know how to teach these things. Like, I'm not really afraid anymore of students and, you know, the classroom management issues. But some low points, it's just the, if we're talking about this year, I think it's just the morale. The morale of being a teacher is really tough. If you guys didn't see, like, LA Unified went on strike, right? They got some of their money. Oakland went on strike not too long ago. I think they're still in conversation. If you guys didn't know, like, our district adopted this payroll system called Empower, and they didn't shove the money to get everything done correctly. So they spent this money to get rid of jobs that were taken by people like in the district office who were in charge of payroll doing these things. And we're like, let's bring it to the new age. Let's make it like automated, right? Smart idea, but they didn't like put enough resources, money into buying the complete program. Like they didn't buy the security codes. They didn't buy the people who should have been working on the this new electronic system. And what happened? Some people died. Like there's this one, you guys can look it up or something, or like find the link or something and then put in the description. Like there's this like para educator who like works with students with, you know, learning disabilities and stuff like that. He was diagnosed with cancer. Empower, for some reason, took his health benefits away. He didn't have health benefits. He couldn't get the things he needed, and he passed away. Really sad, real demoralizing as a teacher, really. Mm. One of my coworkers didn't get paid for 5 months, and he still showed up every day. One of my math department head, he lost his benefits too. Luckily, you know, thank goodness, thank God, like nothing bad happened to him in that amount of time. Another teacher at my school, like apparently they didn't report our California taxes to the California tax board or whatever. So some of our teachers still haven't gotten their refunds back yet. Like there's so many things from the top of this like thing that is called education that is like ruining it for a bunch of teachers. Hence the 15 to 20 people leaving my school. You know, not only are we getting paid shit, but we're not getting paid at all. But we're also like not getting our benefits. And that's like dehumanizing almost. It's like we're putting our all and more to help these students to grow into beings that will like help the world one day, hopefully. And we are getting the scraps, and people still want to say, oh, you get summer off. And if you did the math of like a babysitter, let's say a medium level babysitter, not a high end babysitter, just babysitter. If you had a mid level babysitter, and say 30 an hour, 30 an hour between 120 kids for 7 hours a day. I don't make that near as much. And I'm teaching mathematics to students who have generational trauma, who some of them can't read or write for whatever reason, who can't plot points on a graph. And there's still people who believe, yo, teachers don't need a raise. They don't need all the things we're asking for. And it's like, come on, y'all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's beauty in what I do, but there's also so much that needs to be worked on and improved.
Right.
And like, I think for me, I hated most of my teachers growing up, but then like hearing, like, I'm sure it's because of my immaturity and just like not wanting to go to school, trying to be a rebel or whatnot. Right. But hearing a teacher's side, like now that I'm older, it's like, it's crazy to see first like pay and just, but the things you have to go through, right? Basically you are a babysitter. You're right. Taking care of other people's kids and teaching them things mm-hmm. as a job. Right. And I think it's something that's not appreciated. And I'm like, dang, I was such a horrible student to my teacher. I feel so bad now.
Hey man, as a teacher and as a classroom clown, I feel you. Like I get it. Like, you don't know better as a kid, you know? Yeah. Like, you know, like, and that's no fault to students either. Like, you can be the class clown, but you can also, you still, as the class clown, you still deserve a good education. Yeah. And how do you get a good education? You pay teachers.
Yeah, I think it's very unfortunate that teachers don't get paid what they deserve and that they don't get what they should until they go on strike.
Right.
I remember being in college and I went to Cal State Fullerton and I was going during the time that the Cal States all went on strike and they had that massive, like, I think it was the largest strike in American history for education. And I remember being there during that time and you know, obviously professors were still showing up and teaching, but at the same time, it was like, it was a very like divisive time. And so one of my professors took us, like, took the time during one of our lectures to be like, if you guys have any questions about this strike, like, please ask now and I'll do my best to answer them. And so one of the students, like, looking back, I'm like, wow, the audacity to ask this question. But the student asked, so if you guys get your raise, if you guys get what you're asking for, will my tuition go up? And I'm like, looking back, I'm like, wow, the sheer audacity to ask that question. And but at the moment I was like, wait, that's a good point. Is my tuition going to go up because teachers want more money? And then, like, I think about now also, like, I got financial aid, so it didn't even matter. Like, it didn't matter to me, right? But it's like, yeah, like, and the more I talked to, like, professors, because I got really close to some of my professors, and they talked about how, like, the sad thing is that admins, administrators, you know, like, provost, the deans, people who, like, do all these, like, paperwork stuff for the colleges and for the schools, they'll get raises almost every year.
Right.
Teachers get it once every 10 years, if that. So it's pretty sad. And I was like, why are the administrators allowed to give themselves raises like this? And, like, they're not going to take care of the people who actually make the school what it is, you know?
Right. Right. I will say sometimes it isn't the admin who give the raises. It's like if the teachers are here, admin are here, there's always someone above who, like, handles that, right? Like, so I wouldn't even put it on the admin giving themselves raises. It's like they probably are reaching incentives that whoever's in charge of, like, higher than that are giving those things out. So it's such a weird thing, and sorry to bring the happiness down with the talk of school, but, you know, it's reality, unfortunately.
I think
can switch up to another topic too.
No, I think it's important to have this conversation. We can switch it if we do want to, but I think it's important to have this conversation because I think it's a side of education that's not talked about enough.
Absolutely.
In our generation, there are so many educators, right? But I don't think I've ever heard this side of education before. So that's number one. But also, like, I think it's important for us to also remember that, you know, like, with our podcast, it's, we want to tell the stories of the people we bring on. And this is a part of your story, right? It's not like you're always a fun, happy guy.
There's a very
real emotional side to you as well. And so I think it's important to acknowledge that and to you know, if we're going that route, we can lean into it completely.
That's real. I appreciate that, though. If I could clap, I would clap. Thank you. I really do appreciate you saying that. You know what I mean? Because you know, some outlets only want to hear the happy, the go lucky. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, we're here to have fun, but also to be real. You know. So
gotcha.
For our listeners, for context, what Jeremiah meant, if he could clap, he would. He cut his hand at his 30th birthday with a sharp knife while trying to cut an orange. So he recently had surgery to kind of get his hand fixed. So that is why he cannot clap right now. Just wanted to make sure I cleared that up.
The pinky's back, though. It can move again. I'm going through a lot of physical therapy and wearing a brace for about 12 weeks. So here we are.
That's crazy.
Yeah. 30th birthday. One, you know, one for the grandkids.
You got to make it to grandkids first, man. You know, if every year gets progressively wilder, then I don't think you're going to make it, man.
You're right. This hand, my knee, the liver, all gone, man. All gone.
Yeah. So before we had started talking, I had mentioned to Kevin that basically Jeremiah is probably one of the most injury prone people I know, tearing his ACL twice and then now the cut hand. I guess a question I had for you, Jeremiah, if you were able to rewind to when you first met me, so basically back in college, okay, and you were able to have the foresight of seeing all the injuries come to fruition, would you have changed anything about how you live your life, or would you keep it the same wild and out style?
I will say my injuries were not from wilding out. There's this perception of Jeremiah that I get hurt when I wild out. Sometimes that's true, but my major injuries, like the second time my ACL, so first time ACL happened was soccer. So that happens all the time. Like that's a common thing in soccer. Not that I was playing in league or anything. It was a pickup game on a crappy field with a gopher hole that took out my knee. But second one was, you know, like I was at a bar. Hang on. I wasn't that crazy. Like I literally slipped and caught myself wrong. So I partially tore it. And I guess, Damien, you're right. Like I fully tore it by giving a lap dance to someone at some point. And I still went out and danced on it because I knew what had happened. Like, I could tell that, like, my ACL was torn. So I was like, you know what? I know I have to get a second surgery. Let's go out. Let's keep going. Let's go. Wait, and this was just like, I was just cutting an orange. Like, I didn't realize how sharp the knife was. So,
was your ACL injury the same knee or the opposite knee? Okay.
Same knee.
It's so funny. I know another guy that tore his ACL and he tore the same one.
Right.
And then,
I mean, once it's weekend, it's weekend. You know what I mean? Like, it's never going to be at 100. It may not even be at 90. Yeah. So, I mean, no lie, the second one was a wake up call because I was just like, yo, I can't keep doing this. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I need to make sure that, you know, like after my first ACL, your boy got extra thick as the Snorlax that I have in my lap. And I, you know, that definitely like helped me, like, get that injury, like, let's be real. So after that I was just like, look, I can't keep these same these same habits and stuff. So I was like, look, I need to work out more. I need to make sure like the muscles around my leg are, you know, on the up and up, that way like it takes away from, you know, the pressure of my knee. So going back to what you were saying, Damien, it's like, yeah, I definitely would be like, yo, look out for my health, you know, be aware of my surroundings. And use a cutting board whenever you cut an orange. I would definitely bring a cutting board to that party. But, you know, it's all about healing and the process. And after, you're just grateful that you're still around.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, you know, you can't grow without experience, I guess.
I feel like I've had a lot of experience.
I know Damien mentioned that you play Magic the Gathering, and then I don't know if we said it on the podcast, but he mentioned that you made a club for the students. How did that happen? Because I feel like Magic the Gathering is like kind of older gen in a way. Like kind of like our people, some people in our age play it, but it's like more definitely for the older.
Right. So I got into Magic when I was like a junior in high school. Granted, you're absolutely right. Like, the game came out in like 93. But I mean, it's still like, I think still the most like played trading collectible card game. It's like printed in like, I don't know, 10 different languages, like comes out with like a different set, like every 2-3 months. But I was just like super into it, and I'm still into it. Like, I think it just like, you know, it's one of those hobbies that kind of consumes your thinking. Like, I'm constantly like, I brew decks more than I actually play the physical card game, which is kind of wild. I just like thinking of new strategies and stuff like that. So for me, it's like the more strategy piece. And also, like, you know, I'm a product of Pokemon. Like, I just like collecting crap. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, my room is full of, like, video games and figures and granted, I'm in my nerd room, like I'm in the man cave right now. but I just have been so into it, and it's like such a passion, and it's like the passion that I've leaned more into, especially after like all my injuries, like not dancing as much anymore. It's the one that I'm like, okay, like I can fall on it. I play like online with people. I do Magic Arena, which is the client for like, you know, yep, mobile. I've started doing Spell Table, where you can like use your phone as, you know, your camera, and like it like streams onto your computer, and then it has like recognition, so you don't have to keep asking what is that card on the other person's camera. It's actually pretty dope. But I was like, okay, I want to do this at school. I want to like, maybe I can get some kids into it. So I actually started a trading card game club. So it includes Pokemon. Like, I have a few students really into the card game. I mean, everyone collects those cards. Like, even the, like, I have some students that who just like enjoy collecting Pokemon cards because the arts are cool. And, you know, it's like, even for them, like, we've been there since the beginning, right? Mm-hmm. Like, for them, it's still nostalgic because they, like, it was introduced to them at a young age. So they've been collecting cards. I have some kids who play Yu-Gi-Oh! And I was like, my roommate is a huge Yu-Gi-Oh! Fan. So I play a little bit of that, too. So I wanted to start this club where, like, you know, everyone's on their phone all the time now, especially, like, this, like, students, like, are constantly on their phone. You know, like, high schoolers nowadays are, like, on their phone, they're playing different types of games, Genshin Impact, different MOBAs, like that's it, right? Like that, those are the moves right now. It's like, why pick up a physical card game that costs hella money? So I was like, okay, let me bring all my, like, the cards I started with, you know, just like random bulk stuff. Let me bring some good cards in. Let me see if I can get donations. Shout out Damien for donating a lot of his cards as well. I got a lot of friends who like donated, you know, like they saw online on like Etsy some packs. Okay, cool. Send them over to me. Like, different teachers at their school, like their siblings or children like played in the past, and they're like, yeah, well, you can have it for the club. So I did that, and I gathered a lot of Magic.
Oh God.
And
is this is this what it's like when I make a joke, guys?
Yes. Hands down, yes. That's whatever, so you're feeling right now, that's exactly it.
Good to know.
I gathered a lot of Magic, and I was like, I want to do this. The issue is selling it to students. So I only had maybe 3-4 throughout the year consistently come in and like learn and play. And it was cool, but I was like, damn, I need a rebrand. I need something for this upcoming next year. Mm-hmm. So I've been going to my local game store, Versus Games, where I know the owner, D. He's been there since the beginning. I think Damien might have met him a few times, too, when we used to play in there. But he's such a cool guy. And like, he's not in the store anymore because the game store has grown a lot. So he kind of behind the scenes now, and you know, he has people who work for him, but he's in the store every so often. And I was like, yo, D, like, you know, we have a good relationship. So I was like, yo, man, like, I try to make a club. Can you give me some pointers? And so he gave me some really good advice, like, you know, like make like, you know, mystery packs and hand them out to kids so they can see the art, so they can touch the cards, you know, maybe put in something rare and be like, oh, open up in front of me. Let me see what you get. Oh, that's a rare one. Take that. Show your friends. You know what I mean? Do little raffles, start tournaments, do like all these little different things. And mm-hmm. So like, I got a lot in my mind going on for next year. Hopefully I can restart and rebrand and kind of get more students interested in. And like, I mean, yeah, there's a bit of selfishness in there for me. Like, I wanted people that I could play with, you know what I mean? But like, I also, it's like, yo, this game is really expensive. And you know, again, I'm like in a community where money can't be really spent on things like that, right? Like, mm-hmm. So I'm like, can I bring this sort of, you know, like pay to win kind of game to students who can't pay? And so like that was my goal. And it's still my goal. I want to see it through, and I'm hoping next year like it'll be a lot better. And you know, like I kind of have my mind a little more focused for next year. This year seems like such a blur for whatever reason, but like I think I have great ideas that, you know, will make the club even better. And you know, one of my main students who was part of that club is like, yeah, we're gonna make this real good and get way more people. So he's really about it also. So I see the idea. I just hope it can, you know, come to fruition.
Gotcha. I have a question.
Yeah.
Have you ever played Dungeons and Dragons?
Funny enough, my first Dungeons and Dragons like campaign was like this like really slow, not slow, really fast one-off that my friend is like a DM, and he like always wanted me to go and like do like a whole campaign with him, whatever you call it. I've actually never really did it. Maybe like, I want to say about 6 months ago, he was like, come over, bring two homies. Let's do like a 5 hour, like just one shot. I was like, all right, I'm down, man. I'll bring my dice. I got dice for magic. Like, let's do it. And so like, he kind of pre-built characters for us. Like he kind of like made me a Pokemon master, so I had a like a Charmander, a Bulbasaur, and a Squirtle. And then my friend was like an Earthbender or something, so he kind of like took these like different things that we were all into, like, you know, like, you know, in popular like media type of thing, and like made it into a campaign for me. So like, and like he was like really surprised by like my ideas. Like I really took inspiration from the TV show. Like I had my Charmander out, and like there was like this like giant thing in the way, and I had to like get through it. Like I threw my Pokeball in the air, and my, you know, my Charmander is like level, I don't know, 15. It doesn't know crap yet, right? And so I was like, Charmander, like spin around and use Ember, and it's that Ember becomes like a fire spin. So like he was kind of impressed by my imagination when it came to it. So I was like, yeah, it was really cool. It was really fun. We had to stop at a certain point. My friend like has no imagination. He like, I forgot what character he was. He was like, what's his name? Dante from
Devil May Cry.
Oh, so okay. He's like, I got a gun. I'm going to shoot the thing. I'm like, that, it doesn't work that way. You don't just shoot the thing and it dies, my guy. Like, there's more to it. Uh-huh. So we kind of just ended up like, you know, like we were just like, all right, let's take a break. Let's just, you know, let's just hang out. So that was like my only like experience of Dungeons & Dragons. I haven't done a full like let's roll for all your stats and all that stuff. But I know a bit. And there's been a lot of Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons collaborations over the past few years. Yeah. So I've been like, oh, okay. Like I understand some of these things now more definitely.
Yeah. The reason why I ask is because I do know that there was a teacher, I don't know where, but he started a Dungeons and Dragons club for his school, much like you're doing this Magic the Gathering one, you know?
Yeah.
And he said that it was a great way for him to reach out to his students. And he said that it's a great tool to also help students learn like soft skills that you don't teach in class, like things like communicating, things like teamwork, things like problem solving, creativity, all these things like that, you know, when you're at a table playing Dungeons and Dragons together, like he was saying, it really helps these students. And it helps also, serve as kind of an escape, because for a lot of these kids where they come from rough backgrounds, you know, for this section of time, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours, you know, however long you're playing, you're not you, you're somebody else. And so,
absolutely,
it's a fun escape.
So. I think there is a teacher at my school who like runs a D&D too, so it's actually it's really cool. Like I would totally get down on it too, but like you know, there's only so much time, and a lot of my time is dedicated to the Magic, so it's like I can only have one addiction here.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah,
I think it's cool, like the fact that you created the club instead of like students doing it. Because we had like a card trading club at school, but a lot of kids would just do it outside of the club. They would just do it outside, you know, like in the quads or whatever. And then the fact that I mean, our club got shut down because everyone would just like play each other and take cards, and then people would get pissed off. And so they shut down the club. But I think the fact that like you as a teacher want to get the students involved and stuff like that, it's crazy. Because when I went to clubs in high school, all I saw, the teachers were eating lunch and not like really caring and just sitting there just to watch the kids, right? Like, quote unquote, mm-hmm. right? And so the fact that you are there and you're trying to like put your time and like show these kids that like what you like and like so they can be involved, I think that's awesome.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, I hope it really does come into itself this next year, but we'll see. Definitely going to put in the effort and see if how many people are receptive to it. But yeah, I mean, like, I also like did music club the past 2 years. Like, I had this junior last year who like ran it and like wanted me to be the sponsor. I was like, for sure, bro. And it was just like you're saying, like, it's a good escape for students. Like, they would just come into my room on Fridays, like eat their lunch and just listen to music. Sometimes like a lot of them were in bands, so they would perform in my room too. And like you're saying, it's like a really good escape just from like a normal day at, you know, at a high school where mm-hmm. it's tiring and stressful. Mm-hmm. So yeah, absolutely.
So we're coming up on an hour into our podcast. I think this is a good time for us to move to the section of the infamous section of our podcast that we explain every time we do. But yeah, we're going to move to the rapid fire questions, but you know, it's not rapid fire because we give you plenty of time to think about your answer. And, you know, we also want you to give us, you know, detail of an answer as you want. So, okay. We're probably asking like two questions each, depending. We might go to one question each just if, you know, each answer takes a long enough time. So
I got you.
I'm going to go ahead and start us off because I think that you'll give us a lovely answer to this one. Okay, are you ready for this?
I'm excited. Hit me.
Okay. Have you ever seen Two Pretty Best Friends?
Yo, that is a question. Yes. Yes, I have.
Oh.
I think the common answer would probably be no. But I mean, I think pretty people want to keep other pretty people around. I think there's like a, how do you say this? There's a, like a value in it. Like, there's a value in your group being good looking. So, yeah, like the common answer would probably be no. Like, you always want an uglier friend so you look better, right? But no, I honestly don't think that's true. I think you keep the company. Like, if you're not shallow, and like, I don't really mess with shallow people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I try to keep people who are like real. Like, and I have a lot of pretty friends. Like, they keep pretty friends too. You know what I mean? Like, so I've definitely seen a bunch of pretty best friends in my lifetime.
But like, you know, like, because it's like best friends, not like a pretty group of friends, but like two actual people who like say, hey, you're my best friend. I'm your best friend, you know, and it's like these two people specifically are good looking.
I've seen it. Okay. I also you know, I like to make a lot of friends. So it's like I've definitely seen the two best friends. Have I seen two really hurt friends be best friends? Yes, that too. I've seen the opposite.
Oh, dude.
Jesus. I mean it's a spectrum, yo. It's like I've seen one good, one bad, both bad, both great. Hey man, they had great personalities.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I knew them both.
Okay. I knew them both. I feel like that makes it worse. The fact that he's saying they're both like,
even no one knows who I'm talking about here. So they could think that they're the hot two best friends.
Oh, no. Oh, man, you're killing me. Oh,
hey, okay. Man.
Okay, let's move on.
All right. I got one specifically for Jeremiah that I don't think I've asked before. Pokemon.
Oof.
Legend of Zelda.
Oof.
Magic the Gathering.
Oh, Lord.
You get to keep... Oh, no, you got to get rid of one.
I thought you were going to say sleep, marry, kill.
Oh, you know what? Let's do that instead. I kind of like that better.
Terrible. Okay. Damn, that's tough, man. Who am I... Like, killing is the hardest one, honestly, here. I'm gonna cover his ears. I think I'm killing Pokemon, man. I know it's hard to, and I can give you real reasons.
But Pokemon's the first love, isn't it?
It is. What did Drake say? First love is the sweetest. First cut is the deepest. You know what I mean? Does that make sense? Like your first love is so sweet, but as soon as it hurts you, it really hurts you.
How did Pokemon hurt you?
That's how three times. Like, wait. So
no, okay. So like,
Pokemon hurt.
I got you. I got the reason. I mean, like,
they got rid of Ash recently, right? Is that the reason why?
No. He deserved that dub, man. He deserved that win. Anyway. I think it just becomes such a money grab for Pokemon, right? So it's like they haven't put in the effort, the resources into making it something that the players want. And I'm an avid Pokemon player. I'll say it like this. Like, I've played every iteration of the Pokemon Go series. Or sorry, the staple Pokemon game series. I played every iteration from Red and Blue to Scarlet and Violet. I've played every single one. And it's just like, you're giving me an unfinished game in 2022, right? Scarlet and Violet was not it. Like, it literally was lagging. Like, the story was a lot better than previous games, but, like, it just didn't feel like a final product. It felt like, yo, I'm going to ship it, and I'm just trying to make the most money out of it as possible. Same thing with Pokemon Go. They, like, recently, like, stopped doing remote raids where, like, I could be home and, like, someone at the actual raid site would be like, yo, come join me. Okay, I can do a remote raid and join you from afar. Yeah, it costs a little more, but I was willing to pay it. But now you can only do, like, up to 5 a day, and, like, they cost, like double the amount or something like that. So, like, I was like, I'm like low-key done with Pokemon Go also. So I think that's where I was just like, as much nostalgia and love I have for Pokemon and its characters, like, look at this Snorlax. It has to go. So sleep and marry.
Mm-hmm.
I think sleep is Zelda. Zelda's that thing that come around a few times a year, once every few years, and it's real, real good. You know what I mean? And, like, you're addicted to it for a long time, and then eventually it's like, yo, I gotta go. I gotta see you until the next time.
Mm.
So that's how I feel about Zelda. Zelda's so good. I'm playing Tears of the Kingdom right now. When I was waiting for you guys, I was, like, on the sticks. Even with this hand, I'm still playing it. Like... it's that good. It's like has me like enthralled. Like I'm like all about it right now. And I'm gonna bring it with me on my trip to Europe in a week. So like it's gonna be on me for every train ride, every airplane ride. And so that leaves marrying Magic the Gathering. I think that is like, you know, where all my time, attention, and love has been going to recently anyway. So that's how I view those three.
Josh, you got a question?
I'll go back to the questions I always ask.
Oh, God.
Oh, Lord. I'm excited.
So I asked this starting in season one, and I'm going to keep it going because it just makes it easier for me. And I don't have to come up with new questions. But when you shower, mm-hmm. what's the first area or first place you wash?
Wow.
I'll explain like why I asked these questions after.
Okay. Let me think. So it's kind of bad of me and for the environment, but like I actually like brush my teeth in the shower, and that's the first thing I do is brush my teeth in the shower. Wow. while reading Reddit. on my phone.
On your, so you're like,
I'm going like this. I'm in the shower, my hands out of the shower range, and okay. my body's in the shower, and I'm brushing my teeth, reading like whatever news or whatever is going on in the world, and I'm brushing my teeth. If that counts, if that doesn't count, then I think it's my hair first.
Okay.
And if you want an explanation why, it's because if you think about it, like if I'm washing my hair, all the dirt, grime, or whatever, the oils are flowing down on me, right? So like I do it, I mean, I guess it's my math brain. I go top down, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it goes my hair, face wash, and then my body.
Got it.
Okay. With a nice Dove sensitive skin.
Okay.
Your boy got eczema. Shout out Filipinos, man. We out here.
Shout out to Dove.
Shout out Dove. Sponsor me. Yeah, exactly. Go.
And then I guess the second part of the question is, when you're getting ready to go out, you know, let's say like the beginning of the day, do you put your pants on first or do you put your socks on first?
Underwear first. But then
I mean assuming that your underwears are off.
I hope you
put your underwears on. Unless you go commando.
Yeah, sometimes you know you gotta feel the world. I would definitely put on my socks first. Because I live in the city, right, in San Francisco. So I'm always wearing pants, right? And so the way I view it in my head, it's like I would have to lift up my pant leg and like, you know, I'm from the generation of teach me how to jerk. So my skinny jeans are still on, you know what I mean? So I would have to roll them things up. And especially if you're wearing what, like, you know, longer socks, like it's hard to, you know, do all that if I didn't put on socks first. So socks first, then pants, shirt. Yeah.
So shirt you do optional. It. So, yeah.
So what?
Shirt's optional.
Shirt is definitely optional.
From that explanation, you definitely wear longer socks. Like
sometimes it depends on the day. Yeah, I'm late on the trend. Like long Nike socks, I've been messing with them lately. You know, but
same with Biggie.
Really?
I'm always wearing long socks.
It's the gym. It's the gym like kind of look. So I feel that. I don't know. I think it goes back to that too. Like I've been like trying to run a lot more, so like I don't know, the look, I guess, when I wear shorts anyway.
Got it. Okay. The reason why I ask, I started this in season one. It was like lunch talks at my work, and we asked like, hey, so when you shower, what do you wash first? No, like mostly everybody says hair first. And then I had this one coworker that says he washes his hands, and I'm like, okay, you're a weirdo.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait. Do they wash their hands outside the shower and then go into the shower?
They get in the shower and then they wash their hands. Wow. That's the first thing they do. And I was like, that's kind of weird. Like you kind of wash your hands.
I mean, that's pretty cleanly of them, but I mean, I think it's superfluous. Like it's hella extra.
Yeah. I mean, so we decided, okay. So like, okay, that's one thing. And then the second question was, hey, when you get ready, like, what do you put on first, your pants or socks? And most of us wear shorter socks, like ankle socks.
Mm.
So a lot of us will put pants on first and then put our socks on.
Gotcha. But then
sample size, because you know, the long socks kind of throw a wrench in it. So.
Right.
And then so if you're not normal, like I just say you're a psychopath, but
right. I mean that
you
hand
seem
thing,
pretty normal, you know.
That hand thing, you might need to check on your homie there.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important to remember that when we asked Damien this question, he turned out very bright red.
Yes.
What did he say? Ass first?
But that I said my booty hole, yeah.
Hey man, I respect it.
I got a whole lot of jungle down there, and when you clean the crustiest part of your body first, that just like makes the whole shower feel good.
I feel that. Not my order, but yes, I feel that.
You know, I try to like block that from my memory for the longest time. And the fact that you brought it up, I was like, God damn.
I feel it, man.
I gotta bring it up.
I got a question for y'all real quick in this realm.
Oh yeah.
Baby wipes or not? Ooh. On a daily.
Oh, like to wipe with.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was like thinking like baby wipes. Like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't have a kid.
Yeah, I don't got one either. Yeah. Baby wipes.
I'll answer this first. I'll say like not anymore. Mm. I did for a time of my life because I went I went abroad. I went to India, and you know, culture there is they don't got toilet paper. You know, it's not the most common thing. So we were advised to bring baby wipes, and so gotcha. I did use baby wipes then. But you know, I also did want to immerse myself in the culture, so I was also using left hand and then baby wiping the hand. So
intense.
Yeah, but since I came back, I'm like, yeah, like regular wipes.
You use
like
right hand now.
I just you know, raw hand it with the right hand. No, I just do the regular toilet paper now, left hand. I don't know. Okay, people think I'm weird for doing this, but I'm a right hand dominant person, but I wipe with my left.
I don't find it weird.
I don't find it weird either.
A lot of people tell me that it's weird because like a lot of people are right hand dominant and then they wipe with their right. And then so I'm like, I don't know, it's just normal to me.
Maybe it's also like you, I mean, did you do it before you went to India?
Yeah, it's always been the habit for me.
Mm.
Yeah. So like people, like a lot of people that I went with were saying like, oh, it's weird because I have to wipe with my left now. And I was like, I've always wiped with my left. So I was like, oh, that's so weird. Yeah. And I also answer my phone with my left hand, but apparently that's weird if you're right hand dominant too.
I go back and forth. I don't think that's weird either.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jeremiah. I needed you in my life earlier, man. You're making me feel like I'm a normal. Everyone else in my life has made me feel like I'm a weirdo and a psychopath. So
I mean, let's be real. I'm real eclectic. So.
That's fair. Hey, kindred spirits, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. How about you two? Baby wipes or nah?
I don't think I've ever used baby wipes in my life.
What?
At all?
Maybe when I was a baby, but outside of that, afterwards, nah, never.
Damien, with someone who, you know, I identify with Rumble in the Jungle back there, I think you should consider
that
baby wipes, man. Mm-hmm.
So I've upgraded my game. My wife got
me a bidet.
My wife got me a Japanese bidet with a toilet seat warmer and a light. So I'm good.
Why do you need a light?
When it's nighttime and you're going to the bathroom and you're trying to see,
turn on the lights.
Well, you don't want to harsh your eyes. Don't, like that nice kind of like warm light in the darkness to where it's not where you could be able to see, but not like harsh yourself.
So when you go to the bathroom at night, it's just a glowing toilet.
Oh yeah,
that's lit, bro.
Wait, I'm stuck on the fact that you need a light. I just go full darkness.
I just find a corner, figure it out from there.
Yeah. If you don't hear the water, then you gotta stop.
I mean, I will say there was one time where I was really sketched out because it was like extra dark or something. So I just peed in the bathtub and then I just washed it. Wait, why is that disgusting? Wait, why are you guys disgusted by this?
I'm not disgusted, man.
As if the filth on your body is any better?
Everyone pees in the shower too.
That's what I'm saying.
This is what separates me being the cultured man from
Kevin
the Beast.
You don't pee in the shower?
What?
You don't pee in the shower?
No, I'm talking about like the whole like me being pampered with my bidet that has a light versus Kevin just trying to pee in the darkness.
I will say I am a bidet believer. It's in my future plans after Europe. So once I get that money, I'm getting a bidet too. I love them. Honestly.
They're cheap now, though. I mean, you don't have to have a seat warmer and a light, but they're not that expensive. So
I know that's on the docket of things I need to buy. It's a bunch of magic and then bidet.
Priorities.
Exactly.
But for me, I think it's baby wipes. Yes,
I'm with you, bro.
On the daily.
I use it, yes, to clean. Like, I won't use all of it to, like, wipe because I feel like it's a lot of money. But I will wipe at the end to kind of feel clean. Oh. Yeah.
I'm with that. That's the hype I'm on as well.
I'll use a toilet paper to wipe out most of it, and then at the end just like whoo, and it's and then dry it off a little bit, you know.
Okay.
But I don't take it to work or anything, but when I'm at home,
comfort. You want to be comfort. Yeah. You don't want no itchy ass while you're playing video games. Like that's not fun.
Okay.
Or I'll use a bidet because we have a bidet here too at home.
Oh damn! I need to step my game up, man.
But mine's not fancy. It doesn't have like a heating and light. It's just a handle.
It's a tabo.
Mine also has the water warmer, so it's like warm water spraying up your booty.
Do you have to wait for it to warm up?
No, it's already warm.
What the heck?
Yeah, man. Sure is
now. I just have a handle.
Send a link, bro. Does it also talk to you in like Siri's voice too? Like...
Interesting. Okay, I have a question for all of you guys now then. Like on this topic, since we're talking about our booty holes. Oh, so are we all, you know, Rumble in the Jungle?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Have you guys ever brought the forest down?
No.
No. Not back there. Just because, how do you bring the forest down?
Yeah, I'm not flexible enough to get that.
You just look and then you just hope for the best.
Evan's more flexible than I thought.
I'm just more afraid of the itch and like everything that comes along with shaving.
Oh no! I would just trim with like a scissor.
That's even scary.
Yeah, and I'll say I only did it once because it's too terrifying.
Bro, if I do that with scissors, I am getting ass surgery. Like, you know what I mean? Like. I'm slicing something down there, bro. So scissors are a no-go for your boy.
Here's gonna make himself incontinent. That's what's gonna happen.
Oh my god.
He'll be wearing adult diapers the rest of his life.
Oh, that's crazy. Okay, I have to say this, guys, okay? At some point in your life, try it out. No, okay, hear me out, okay? Because I understand. It sounds gross. And it sounds weird, right? But I have to say this much is that, like, think about it this way, right, guys? It's been so long since you've wiped your butt with a not hairy butthole, right?
This is getting too descriptive.
Wait, this is our podcast, okay? It's been think about it. It's been so long since you guys have wiped without a hairy butthole that you guys don't remember what it's like. And I'll say this much, okay? When I did trim and the first time I wiped, like, it was so clean and pure I thought I missed. Like, I'm just saying, okay? And I can tell you guys are still pushing back, okay? So I'll go a little further, okay? Think about this, okay? All right, if you were to get poo, like human poo, on the hair on your head, right, would your only reaction be to take a little bit of toilet paper, wipe that out, and like go like this, and then be like, "That's clean."
Damn, no, that's real. That's
I don't know how much hair you have down there, but that's not that much hair.
No, but think about right? Like that's disgusting. And also think about I will raise you another situation, okay? Like when you have the hair down there and you wipe it, right? Okay, all you're doing is you're not really like cleaning it per se, but you're just kind of moving it around. Like think of like a rug. And you've got peanut butter in there. You're just kind of moving bits around, like it's just soaking into the rug.
All I'm saying. Kevin's providing not only an image of what his asshole looks like, but also an image of what his bowel movement is. I don't have to wipe that much because my bidet also has a blow dryer, so I don't get it. I don't got none of these problems that you're having.
Who am I, this guy?
So Jeremiah, you know how you're talking about you have a privilege of serving low socioeconomic status kids. Like we have someone in this room that has so much privilege. Like, geez, dude. Like, hey, can you share some of your privilege with the students? How about that, Damien?
Can you share with me? Can I try one?
For real, I'm coming over right now.
Kayla's already gotten upset at me, and she says, "You need to stop inviting people to our toilet. It's our toilet in our bathroom. Stop doing it."
That's hella funny.
Can you get one for the guest bathroom then?
Those cost the one that she got me, and it was for my birthday. It was like my birthday present. It was like $500. So that give me a little bit. Give me a little bit of time before I could get it for the guest bathroom.
Damn, bro.
Bucks. Mine was $30 on Amazon. It's just a handle bottle with water.
Damn, bro. 500? Does it tickle you too? Like
massage you too or what?
I'm very grateful for my wife. She takes care of me.
I love that. I love that. But yeah, I will say this. I am not against it, like trimming and all that good stuff back there. It's just like, I'm just like so afraid of like the itch and the uncomfortableness of like hair growing back. And I know you're saying just take some scissors or something, but like, I feel like, man, I don't know. Yeah. Even then, like, I'm like, oh, I just don't want to be uncomfortable sitting down or walking around in front of students all day itching my ass. You know what I mean? Like, but I mean, the alternative is like
waxing.
Manzillion. Yeah. Or waxing? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, you have a partner, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You just enlist her help.
I don't want to do that either. It sounds so painful. I'd be crying.
I'm just saying, I'm not saying you guys have to do a whole lifestyle change, right? Like I said, I only did it once. All I'm saying is that you guys should try it at least once in your life.
One day when I'm not afraid of
pain.
Pain. When I can't feel my ass anymore. Yeah.
You gotta do it while you're in the prime of your youth, man.
Oh, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay.
Man.
Okay. I think this is enough. in the edit, I might delete this whole section.
Oh, totally fine. Be in the bloopers, the adult. You can put it on Patreon.
We don't even have a Patreon. Maybe we should make a Patreon.
Okay. Oh, man. Hide it all behind a paywall.
Extra content. It's like the free OnlyFans versus the premium one.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I'm definitely cutting all this out. All right. Well, Jeremiah, thank you very much for coming on, and thank you for sharing your story, particularly, you know, bringing a light to a side of education that we didn't know about, and being very real with us. Thank you very much for, you know, talking about magic, because that was also something that Josh and I had no experience with. So it was very interesting to hear a little bit more about magic. You know, I really hope that you can come away from this conversation feeling at the very least encouraged. You know, like, I think that it's very admirable being a teacher, particularly in this post-COVID era. And so I hope that, you know, you can feel encouraged knowing that, you know, you're doing good work out there. And I think it's great that there are teachers like you out there. I feel much more comfortable knowing that, one day if I have to send my kids to, you know, public education, which I probably will because I'm a broke kid, I feel a little comfortable knowing that there are teachers like you out there who are trying to make a real difference, you know. So
I appreciate all the kind words, man. I really appreciate all three of you for having me on the show. I feel like I can totally be real around you guys and, you know, give my truth and, you know, just feel comfortable doing it. So I really appreciate this opportunity, and I would love to come back one day, or, you know, even help host one day, and be a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. You could be like the Damien of season 3. with that out of the way, do you have any last words for our listeners?
Keep doing things you want to do. Keep doing things you love. There's so much hardship in the world, whether it be your own stuff or just things happening in the world. Find the little things that make you happy, those little beams of light, and just keep doing them. Whether it be dancing, a sport, magic, video games, writing, poetry, reading, television, whatever makes you happy, keep doing those things. Because I feel like a lot of people, you know, get so caught up in their 9-to-5 or what have you, they forget to do the things that actually make them human. Mm-hmm. Instead of just working in this capitalistic society. There's more to life than money. money helps, but there's definitely a lot more beauty in this world without it.
Thank you very much for that. With that out of the way, I guess, thank you everyone for hanging in there and listening to this conversation that went all over the place emotionally. but yeah, thank you for listening. It's a very fun conversation, and we will see you guys next time, not next week.
See ya.
Later.